Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show, aliveandkicking at newstalk.com, or you will find me on Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up this morning, with blended families now making up a third of all families, I'll be joined by a family therapist to hear about the challenges as well as the joys. The Offline Club are encouraging phone-free events, and I'll be meeting its founder here in Ireland. And speaking of Ireland, ahead of St. Patrick's Day, Chef Erica Drum will join me on the joy of food and the best of Irish produce. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, I've just had a great week, I must say. I had a great run of lovely work gigs. I interviewed Brezzy on stage for his album and book launch. Lots of you are in touch about his interview on the show last week, so thank you for that. And for International Women's Day, I had a number of speaking events, some pushing me way out of my comfort zone. But I must say, I'm really enjoying this new way of connecting with people, giving an interview or giving a talk and then meeting people after to chat about it, with many saying they might resonate with the words I've said or give me their opinions or, you know, their life stories. And we all share about our chaotic lives. And I think with wellness talks in particular, people really seem to like the authenticity that I try to bring, that I don't have it figured out all of the time and, you know, nobody else has to. And that good enough is good enough, along with a few tips and a few rousing statements for the women of the world this week. I really, really enjoyed it. And I was in Paris Court in Wicklow for the day itself, International Women's Day, as part of Dublin Book Festival. And the event celebrated women's voices. Now, my part of the day involved chatting to Muireann O'Connell. And then I got to hear Derv Lemescal speak about her book, Finding Joy. Now, I'd seen lots of snippets with Dervla online, and she was here in News Talk talking to Claire Byrne, and I knew I liked what I saw and heard, but wow, I absolutely loved hearing her story, hearing about her mission to find moments of joy in life, and to then sit beside her as we both signed copies of our books for people with the sun blasting through the windows of the stunning Paris Court Gardens. Honestly, it was a real pinch me moment that I think I will never forget. Now, not all weeks were like that, and it's worth pointing out that mine was also peppered with minding my mum who wasn't well, cleaning up after the puppy, the teen, the tween, and laughing about it all with my hubby. Yes, a normal, chaotic life. You can email the show, aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, families don't come in the same shape anymore. And for many, love the second time around means blending children, traditions and whole other histories under one roof. Blended families or step families can absolutely work, but that rarely happens overnight. So how can you create a real sense of belonging for everyone? Joining me now is family psychotherapist Madeline Connolly. Madeline, you're very welcome.
Thanks very much, Claire. Great to be here to talk about this very important subject.
Because it is becoming more and more the norm, isn't it? I heard a stat recently that a third of all families in the UK are blended. I don't know if we have the statistics here in Ireland, but relationships break up, you know, people move on. That has definitely become a bit more the norm, and that can lead to blended families.
Absolutely. And while I don't have the stats either, what I do experience is that there are more and more families where the two parents, one might be a step parent and one might be a biological parent of that child. So it's certainly a trend that we're seeing increasing. And these are coming to us then in some ways to try and sort out some of the challenges that comes with it. But absolutely, I'm glad you said that they can and do work after sometimes a period of just adjustment and adaptation for everybody.
So what are some of the challenges then that you might face?
So there are challenges. And I suppose the first challenge is to recognise that there are challenges. In other words, to check in with your own children and then with your new partner on how things are going. So sometimes they're hidden challenges and they don't come to the fore until actually it's a problem. So the kinds of challenges a lot of blended families find are, let's say if we take stages, so you might have an adult child whose parent is now in a new relationship. And they might be concerned about how this is going to work out for them. They might be still living at home. They might wonder about inheritance issues. So that's at the very top level where a parent might need to get some advice and some counsel on what's the best thing to do here for my new family, for my children, who I want to support still and be a supportive parent? And what's the smartest way to deal with it? And really, with an adult child, the smartest thing is to communicate and be as transparent as you can be after settling on how you think you want to do it as a parent. The challenges for an adolescent are always worth talking about, because they're at a very particular intense stage of their life where they're trying to figure out what is their identity, where do they belong, who do they belong to. You know, life is a really exciting time for an adolescent. It can also be quite an intense time where they feel deeply and they can sometimes feel disconnected, even in a family where they live with both their parents. So in a blended family, this can actually be more intense quite often for an adolescent, but definitely workable with, you know, in that case, you'd ask a parent to stay connected as much as you can. And if you're not the resident parent, if you're not the parent who's living with that adolescent, don't give up. Keep trying to connect, even if they push you away. Stay in your position and do everything you can to remain connected and keep that relationship going. Because quite often an adolescent may not say it in so many words, but might fear losing that connection that they've enjoyed with that parent who's now found a new partner. And give it time. I think that's one of the biggest things for adolescents. Give them time, give yourself time. And if you're co-parenting, obviously the ideal scenario is where you can both look at what this young person needs and work together to try and meet their needs, as well as your own needs in these separate relationships. Does that make sense?
Completely. And, you know, every family is going to be different, as you say, but I really took that, you know, you give things time and accept that it is going to be challenging, but it doesn't mean that it can't perhaps work out. And I ask this next question with full compassion, and I'm up for the answer being no to the question. But is it very much a top-down approach? Is the relationship that perhaps the separated couple or the new couple have that really sets the tone? And I think that can be challenging in and of itself, because there was a relationship breakdown, which can often lead to all kinds of communication issues.
Yeah. And I'm not sure what you mean by top down, but I think what I understand you saying is, can how the parents manage that initial new relationship have an impact on how the relationship goes? And the answer is absolutely yes. If you can have a conversation with the other parent about what might change or what you'd like to stay the same, the closer parents and step parents are communicating with each other and supporting each other, the more likely there's going to be a better outcome for the children in those relationships. Absolutely.
I was sort of putting parents at the top, but would you always put parents and kids a little bit more equal?
No, I think in any situation that involves a lot of change, and that's very stressful because parents have changed their lifestyle, if you like, in a good way. Quite often they've left maybe a difficult relationship and they're trying to set up a relationship where they might change, you know, the way they made mistakes in the past. I think they do lead the way. They have to be the leaders in this by setting good examples, by being respectful of each other in their separate lives, you know, by sort of being flexible is the key, particularly with children who have busy lives, is that you're not rigid on the time a child should spend with me or the time, this is my turn, this is your turn. Flexibility and cooperation between parents is definitely the key to a better life. But there's always a way through a problem. I think that's the way to see it if you feel stuck, is just think rather than react and say, okay, what's the best way to manage this? Whose point of view do I need to listen to? Who do I need to hear? And then what will we do about it?
You feel it can take up to 4 years to establish a blended family. Time to adjust has to be taken into account.
I think so, because I think initially there can be kind of a honeymoon period, if you like. Everybody's, you know, hoping for the best. Everyone wants everything to work out. Everybody's working hard, even from the parents' point of view. But for a child, it can actually be quite a change to their lives. You know, they're having to get their heads around, one, the fact that when my parent meets a new partner, really that fantasy I might have held as a young child that they might get together again is gone. So they have to adjust again to another loss, if you like. The separation might have been a loss for a child, but then a parent meeting a new partner takes getting used to. What does it mean for me as the child? Who am I going to live with? What do I call my father's partner? You know, all of those changes will come with it. So I think it's better to think this will take time. So when you have a hiccup or a challenge, take your time to sort it out, give it the time it needs, you know, and go in easy. And particularly step parents, they really want it to work out. They, you know, they want the relationship to work out, but they might fear that they won't get it right. So they can be quite anxious to get it right. And the key to that is to talk to their partner, say, look, I'm not sure I'm doing this right. I'm not sure I can even do it. And have those conversations together so you can support each other in those roles as well. And for a child, you know, given time and space, I think you have to acknowledge with them, look, I know this is tricky, I know this is hard, but we'll get there. And I'm still going to be a parent and I'm not going anywhere and we'll get through it together. And I think that message will help to settle that child into their new life and the new way of doing things and setting new memories maybe with the new blended family, but holding on to some of the ones they hold dear with their previous family and with their parents. So it shouldn't be a, you know, an either or. It should be a very nice blending of both and. And just on the title of blending, it's not that a child has to blend into somebody else's family. They have to find their place in that family, how they're enjoyed, how they're liked, what they're bringing to this new family. And when they do that, they will be more comfortable then in that, you know, in their part, as part of the family. So I think consideration and time needs to be given to all of these different things that are going on for all the different members of the family groupings.
What is your advice around tricky times such as holidays, you know, breaks from school, family celebrations? How can parents in a blended family work this out?
It's really important. I mean, I always know if I get calls for an urgent visit, you know, in December, you know in your heart and mind that this is because Christmas is coming. It's the first time we've done it as separated parents and we want to make it the best experience for our children. So planning, you know, and for the adults to plan. It's not for the children to try and sort all of that stuff out. But in that, it's not to be too rigid because children have busy lives. So you take an adolescent, they're not coming to you because they don't love you. They might have something else going on. So it's to learn to have a softer approach to that and say, okay, well, look, I can change my plan. Can I give you a lift there so at least I'll see you? You know, so the pressure is off the adolescent to please the parents at those times. And even for younger children, you know, you can make new memories and traditions, but you have to listen to what they want to hold on to, particularly in the early years, what they loved doing before and how you can fit that in as well as have new memories with your child and maybe with their step siblings, if you like.
And we focused very much on the children, which, of course, is very important. But what about the adults in all of this? I think it must be very tricky if you are blending your families together, but then you're trying to navigate, you know, parenting differently. What is your role? Because there may well be, you know, another parent living outside of the house. You don't want to overstep boundaries. So it can be very difficult. I assume, again, communication here is key and making sure you're still making time for the relationship outside of the family.
I think it's really important, especially you're in this new relationship because maybe it gives you a different chance to have a relationship that might sustain through hard times. So you really invested in making this work, but you've got to let your partner know that no matter what the bumps, we'll try and work it out together. We'll check in with each other. You know, you sort of every now and then check in, do something special to maintain and preserve what you have together that's different to what you have with your respective children or respective families. So I think the key is to be able to support one another, whatever comes up, and to be able to say it. It's quite difficult sometimes for a parent of a child to say to a step parent, I wouldn't really do it that way without causing offence. So it's a sensitive area. One of the things I really like about this work is looking at what we call the delay principle, where you try not to react in the moment, but you move into a place where you don't react, but you come back to it at a time when you've thought about it and you've thought about how you might do this, approach this conversation, this challenging conversation. So if you think of that in your head, the delay principle, I won't react now, it didn't quite sit with me, but when I find the opportunity, we can talk it through and I can tell her how I feel and hear from her point of view what was going on for her. So those key communication strategies for any couple are really important, this kind of listening and being listened to and being heard and looking at things from different angles. It's never an either or. Even for parenting, you know, you don't want one to be in one position and one in the polar opposite. There's always a middle ground to be found. Nobody's right in that situation. It's just, what can we do that'll work in this situation for both of us? My way isn't necessarily the best way, nor is yours. How can we meet in the middle and work this through together? That's really what's best in terms of communication, I would suggest.
Yeah, and as you say, that's for everyone, even outside of blended families, or indeed even parenting together. And where there are then bumps in the road and challenges, and you know, where things don't go as planned, you always recommend to repair ruptures. You can always go back and say either to the child or your partner, or you know, the other couple in the relationship or the other parent, you know, sorry about that. Where can we be better here? Or, you know, keep the communication going.
There's always room for relational repair. So even if you feel you've made the worst mistake of your life, it's worth thinking about it and saying, look, I got it wrong. You know, this is what was happening, you know, and to say to a child, look, I'm sorry. I realize what I've been doing hasn't been helpful for you. How can I get it better now? How can I do it differently? I wonder, would this work? And for adults in that situation, relational repair can happen even while you're trying to work it out. So you can start sort of keeping each other in mind, doing, you know, small gestures for each other, which is also demonstrating repair, isn't it? And then at some point, you know, you can talk about it when it's comfortable to talk about it. Again, it's very hard to talk about something when stress is high. It's better to wait till, you know, it calms down, you know, strike when the iron is cold, as we say, and then have a more sort of a more reasonable conversation with each other about it. So one of the things, again, is to try and make space and time for those conversations and say, yeah, I did. I got that wrong. I wonder how I could have done it differently. And there's no blame. There's no shame. This is an extraordinary situation that everybody's in. There's no right way that anyone knows how to do it. But it's being able to talk about that.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to hear from Alive and Kicking listeners. How many of you are navigating blending families? You can let us know your experiences. Let us know what works for you. You can email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. But Madeleine Connolly, family psychotherapist, thank you so much for coming on.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Alive and Kicking on News Talk. Alive and Kicking on News Talk.
Now, of course, St. Patrick's Day takes place on Tuesday. So how can we make the most of the incredible Irish produce that's in season right now? Well, I'm joined in studio by Chef Erica Drum. Erica, you're very welcome.
Thank you so much.
I missed you over the winter because we don't have a lot in season. We just get through it with our soups and our casseroles and we keep our head down. But spring is in the air and things are blooming once again.
Yeah, it really feels like we're alive again, doesn't it? With the sun on our faces. That was a long few months there. And I am so happy. I realized when I was you know, planning for this interview today that this really is my favorite time of year in terms of optimism and hope and joy and like just that kind of relief of you know, hibernating, I suppose, which isn't a bad thing. We all need it and nature needs it. But yeah, it's just such a lovely, yeah, open time of year where things start to grow before our eyes. And in terms of food and seasonal stuff, we get things that we literally cannot get any other time of year. So, you know, like we're used to seeing lemons all year round in the supermarket or peppers or tomatoes or whatever else. But things like wild garlic, which I know I talk about often and every time it comes around to the season, but it's so special. We cannot get it at other times of the year. So that's what makes it, I think, particularly special, and this time of year particularly special. Also, rhubarb is another one that you can't buy rhubarb in September, maybe not September, but from September to now, you can't get it. Like it doesn't grow anywhere. And that's another reason that we should make it sacred and look after it and enjoy it and cook it.
And because we are being patriotic with St. Patrick's Day on the horizon, we are so lucky with our Irish produce. I never forget it. And I often think of when I go on the continent, and I know there are beautiful meals you can have away, but I just don't think there's anywhere like Ireland for food. And that love of food that we have.
And quality of food as well. And that's across the board. It's not even just our you know, vegetable produce. It's our meats, it's our fish, it's our dairy. Like we're spoilt.
And from farm to fork, you can tell real love and care goes into everything. And our local producers, like, I feel a real connection to Irish food, I have to say. I really celebrate it all of the time. I think we've got incredible producers here.
We do. And it doesn't have to be small either. Like, we are a small country. So anything that's being made here and sold in our, even our big supermarkets, it's still local. It's still Irish produce, you know, like if you think of the States or Australia or something, things have thousands of miles to travel, whereas we are just like, yeah, we're really spoilt and lucky. But I do think we're very much representing or being more respectful towards it and more conscious of it these days, aren't we?
Yeah, like I would always look at my veg, like I want my carrots to be Irish carrots.
Yeah.
And if they're not, like, I've started to ask the supermarket, you know, where are the Irish carrots?
Yeah, it's amazing. And do it. And we all should do it. Like, I see there's obviously a lot happening on social media about this as well, where it's a good thing. It's difficult as well. Our supermarkets particularly have rules, and those rules are hard to meet for a lot of smaller producers, or for the amount that might be needed in all the supermarkets or whatever. But yeah, definitely ask, encourage your, because, you know, they all have, even the independent shops have the manager who might be able to allow for a small local farmer to provide for them as well. So yeah, definitely ask.
And so many of the basics that I think we take for granted, often I don't, like Irish butter, obsessed with it. Irish bread, Irish brown bread. Like when I'm away, I'm missing that. I'm like, where's the brown bread?
Yeah, I cook for a lot of American tourists. Well, I have done over the years. They come to my house and they can't comprehend it, because they don't get the same flour as us. They don't get that whole meal flour, even the flavour. And that's also so simple. It's one of the best things to cook with kids is Irish soda bread, because it's a messy, kind of sloppy situation. It's not a kneading, taking time. It's done from start to finish in an hour. Like, it's really a gorgeous recipe.
Yeah, Irish porridge, like you name it. When I'm picking it up, I'm really proud of it. And I think that's how we should be. So have you got a few green recipes for us to try for St. Patrick's Day?
Yeah, just to give you a note on some other gorgeous green things that are in season. So obviously we've got the wild garlic, which I'd recommend picking. If you smell garlic when you're on your forest walk, it's around you. So pick it deep in if you can. And it's going from now for another 4 or 5 weeks. There'll be a white flower on it as well, which you can eat, which is absolutely delicious. Cabbages, kale, leek. Spring greens are coming in. They're all still going. We've got purple sprouting broccoli as well. And for green recipes, I've got this gorgeous wild garlic pesto upside down tart, right? So really it's the wild garlic pesto, which is fabulous, and you can make it with basil or something else if you prefer. But other veg that go in that tart could be something like asparagus, which is also coming in a few weeks' time, and other spring greens. But the trick to this tart is that you put everything on the tray and then put your puff pastry on top of it. So you bake it with the puff pastry upside down, essentially. So when it's cooked, you turn the whole tray the other way around and you've got crispy pastry on the bottom, and then your toppings are the other side around. So that's really delicious. Another dish I have for you is lemon chicken with tender stem broccoli. So we'll start seeing tender stem broccoli in the shop that is from Ireland now over the next few weeks. And I love that with chicken, lemon and a little bit of flaked almonds on top. So that's one of my favourites.
And is that like a tray bake that you do that?
Pasta.
Okay.
Yeah, I really like it. It could be done with something like rice, or even small orzo pasta would be lovely. But I like the kind of length of a linguine or a tagliatelle with it, with the length of the tender stem broccoli, because it's a long stick, you know.
So what do you do with the chicken? Tell us about how you make that from kind of start to end.
Finish. Okay, so we do strips of chicken kind of long ways. Again, kind of mimicking the shape of the pasta and the shape of the tender stem broccoli, because that's the hero here, really. And I'd fry the chicken in a little bit of butter, maybe with a small chopped onion, and let that cook, get a little bit of colour on it. You could cook your pasta, and while the pasta's cooking, use a colander above it, or a steam pot above it. I have like a large pot for pasta and then a steamer basket, you know, that goes.
That's clever.
Anytime I'm cooking my pasta, I'll steam my veg that's going in. So it's good for clean up as well. So I'll steam the broccoli, not too much, like maybe a few, 3 minutes towards the end of the pasta cooking, and toss that through with some pasta water, very important. And you've got lemon zest and lemon juice in there. If you've got a spot of white wine as well, it'd be lovely. And put in your pasta water, so let that thicken up a little bit. It's not a really heavy dish. It's something that's quite light and spring-like. And then separately, I'd have flaked almonds and maybe a little bit of something like a pangrattata, which is crisped up breadcrumbs. So I've toasted them maybe with the almonds, a little bit of butter and some of the lemon zest and herbs. Parsley's gorgeous in there as well. And that sprinkles on top. They call that a poor man's parmesan. So the breadcrumbs being crisped up to replace the kind of parmesan.
Yeah. Yum.
Really tasty.
What about green goddess salad? That's something I often see on social media and I haven't tried to make it yet. It's the dressing is the green goddess part,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. This was a craze, an Instagram and TikTok phenomenon. And this is where you blend a good few green ingredients. So we've got like spinach, basil, scallion, some other herbs. Like we have kale here. You could put that through as well. And that's in season. And mix it with some lemon juice, some parmesan if you want, salt and pepper. And you're kind of, and nuts. So you're kind of creating this creamy dressing nearly, but it's green. Hence the green goddess.
And is there a liquid there or do you just blend it enough until it goes liquidy?
Yeah, you could put olive oil in it as well. But I like to use the lemon juice to give that kind of kick, and then the nuts kind of blend down, you know, when nuts have so much oil content in them. So put the olive oil, definitely. It will go liquidy, and then you're going to add that. If you want to loosen it from your whatever blender you're using, you can use a little water as well. And then you're going to add that to chopped cabbage. And I think it's hard to eat, right? Chopped cabbage. You know, it's something we might not realise we're eating because it's in coleslaw, but that is, and that's raw. So it's the same idea. It's goes into it, it creates this amazing flavour. It makes it so Moorish. But the reason it's so good for you, I think, is because you're taking your time to eat it and you're eating cabbage that you probably wouldn't often eat, particularly not in a raw scenario. So the flavour of the dressing just makes it so tasty and you want to come back for more. It's a really good one to make a big batch at the start of the week and have it, you know, with your lunch or with a, you know, pan fried breast of chicken or something if you want it. I used to do it as well. I say used to because it was last year, but I'll do it again now, spring, with pasta. So I make the sauce and then pour it over pasta again. Maybe I'm pasta house this at the moment.
Yeah, life you have a toddler. You have a toddler. Pasta is a great one.
Life is easier with pasta. And it's really tasty. Yeah, just parmesan on top as well. I love a bit of parmesan through it.
So that will last in the fridge. If you make that, will you get a week out of that in an airtight container, a jar even?
Yeah, you definitely would. And particularly the cabbage, it holds out. Like it's really, cabbage is so sturdy. I'm talking about the tight whitehead cabbage, you know. You could use red as well. Colour might be a bit odd because the green and the red would mix. But the white cabbage, yeah, it would definitely last you the week.
So for the green, white and gold then, we have the orange and almond cake topped with rhubarb. I mean, how easy is this one? Because people might be having friends over for St. Patrick's Day. Is this a crowd pleaser?
Absolutely. And so adaptable. The reason I'm talking about orange is because they're in season as well. Obviously, they're not grown down the road beside us here, but they are in our local countries around us in Europe. So they're in Spain. We all know blood oranges as well, which are so pretty and beautiful. Lemons, all citrus really is in season. So oranges are just at their peak and they go really well with rhubarb. So this recipe is foolproof. It is so delicious and so straightforward. So 6 eggs, 250 caster sugar and 250 almonds. And then the flavouring can be whatever you want. So I've done orange here. You could do lemon. It's kind of like a polenta cake that people might know, but it's an almond cake. So it's also gluten-free, which is handy as well. All of that gets mixed up, put into your tray that's been well greased and gets baked in the oven. And then I poach rhubarb separately and I'll place that on top. And like kind of like a lemon drizzle cake. Pop a few holes in the top, place on the rhubarb and pour over the drizzle that I've made, which has honey and orange in it as well.
I said people, you might be having people over. Will you have me over for St. Patrick's Day? It all sounds delicious. I'm absolutely starving now. And just as all the produce is kicking off, what about you? Have you got a spring and a summer full of festivals and events where you'll be?
Yeah, I do. I'm so excited. We actually get the hungry gap that, you know, that I've talked about before is actually like kind of April, May-ish, because things that have been growing through the winter aren't ready yet. And things that have started in the spring for the summer aren't ready yet or are finished. And the ones that for the spring and summer aren't ready yet. So coming into that festival season, I'm actually doing a pop-up dinner in Ballymaloe Food Festival, which is one of my favourite festivals. It's incredibly fun and exciting and full of people talking about delicious food and lots of people coming from abroad, which is really cool because we get to hear these, you know, voices that we might not have heard or tastes and flavours that we might not know. And that is in May. I'm also hosting the main stage at Wellfest, the Well Food stage. So I might see you there, Claire, I'm sure. Looking forward to that. We've got some really good names, again, coming from abroad and, of course, some local heroes too. So I'll have all of that up on my social media.
And where can people find you? What's your Instagram handle?
So we can find me, as always, on Erica Drum, E-R-I-C-A-D-R-U-M with I-E at the end.
Erica Drum, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Claire.
Alive and kicking on News Talk. Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, do you ever feel like we're all a bit disconnected by being so connected? We've got smartphones in our hands on the bus, the Dart, even walking down the street. But somehow, it's getting harder to actually connect with people in real life. A new social movement is asking a simple question: what happens when we put the phones away? The Offline Club Dublin is hosting phone-free events, and Lexi, who's behind it, joins me in studio now. Lexi, you're very welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me.
And you were asking that question yourself. You were seeing everybody or having the phone in your own hand. You know, we're all in it. Yeah, she has a phone beside her right now. It's a very normal part of modern life, but you wanted to create space when it wasn't there.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I still remember the times when we didn't have the phones and we actually talked to strangers and talked to each other. Currently, when you go to the bus or to the Dart or anywhere else, it's just everyone's just scrolling. And sometimes when you even go for like a restaurant or lunch with your friends, everyone's on their phones and no one's really asking really deep questions. It's really hard to make a real connection. So it feels like we are more connected with the people online on our screens than with the people who are literally in front of us.
Yeah, I mean, it just happened to me getting in the lift to come here and speak to you. My head was down in my phone. I went to the wrong floor three times. So not only are you missing what you need to do, I think sometimes you're missing that connection with people, those simple little pleasantries. I know some people can be really anti-small talk. I love it because you just never know when a simple smile or a comment on the weather or a bit of banter about something you both notice, it can really make someone's day.
Yeah, exactly. And you can see even on the streets of Dublin, there's a couple of lights currently that are just showing the red. So people are looking on their phones and not just crossing the street straight away like a zombie. So that's the terrifying thing. But yeah, it's something that really bothered me, to be fair. I'm not really big for the small talk. I'm bigger for like really meaningful questions. And a couple of people who have been on our events, we ask them, hey, what is really exciting in your life today or like right now? And a couple of people looked at me and they said, you know what? No one ever asked me that question. And it's kind of weird because also like when you cross the street, someone's like, oh, hey, how do you do? But they don't really want the answer for this. Mm. And on our meetings, people actually do want the answer and people really feel wanted, listened to and kind of present within all of this. And it's really funny because on the first event, they already made friends. And they said that they actually had deeper conversations with them than they had with their colleagues at work for like years. So that's an interesting thing. And last but not least, how do you make friends as an adult? I don't know.
Yeah, it can be really difficult and challenging. So tell me about the Offline Club. This first originated in Amsterdam.
Yes. So our HQ is in Amsterdam and it originated a couple of years back. And the guys started with the idea of, you know what, I think I'm a little bit addicted, so maybe let's leave the phones in the house and go for a weekend off. And they said that they made so many things and felt so creative that they want to show it to other people. So they started with retreats, like weekend retreats. But then they thought, okay, this is getting really expensive. What if we just made events in which people just switched off for 2-3 hours during the week? And they started doing those. And all of a sudden, it's a huge movement. We have like chapters in Paris and Germany and Switzerland and Italy and the UK and now in Ireland. So I personally actually went to one of those Amsterdam events for the book event. And I was actually like super interested in it because I was like, oh, great. No phones at all. No one can even be like, oh, I'm going to check something quickly and then stays on this phone forever. At one point when I was in Dublin, I thought, oh, I wonder if this is in Dublin. And it wasn't. So I thought to myself, then I'll bring it.
I love it. And You do find your attention span changing, don't you? No matter how engaging the conversation, no matter how much you're enjoying the night, even, you know, at a concert now, we're thinking, how can I record this and show people I'm here? It's a different lens to enjoy something or be in something. So not only do you get pulled in to check, is anybody WhatsApping me? You know, what time is the bus? Whatever it might be. You're pulled away from the experience time and time again. Tell me about that event in Amsterdam. You said it was a book event, a reading event.
Yes. So we have a couple of types of events. I guess we're going to get to this. But in Amsterdam, my friend was looking for a book club and we went through all the magical events in Amsterdam and we found this one and we were like, oh, that's really interesting. So we came in and there was like 70 people just reading. And it's really also interesting because a lot of people I saw that they're having problems with attention span, even with a book. So they read a couple of pages and then they're like, ah, I'll just check something on my phone. Or, how does this character look like in the fan art? And then they stay on this phone instead of reading. So it was really interesting to just sit there for 3 hours. And those events are reading and then some social time. So during the social time, people were really into it and they could have conversations about the books they are reading, give some recommendations or just talk about life. And it felt fresh in a way, because as you said, when I go to a concert, I better check, you know, if anyone knows that I'm on this concert and it's cool. And a lot of people are just on their phones instead of experiencing the real thing. So also some of the people on our event said that, oh, but how do people know that I was there? And I'm actually running on those events with a normal camera, because I said to them like, hey guys, I'm totally into the offline thing. So I'm not doing pictures on my phone. I have a camera. You're going to get all of the pictures and then you can post that you have been here. You have lost nothing. So then they were like, oh, okay, then everyone will know. And it's kind of this weird feeling that everyone wants everyone else to know things. But at the same time, I just remembered we had 18-year-old person that actually said that he comes to our events because he is afraid that whenever he goes out, someone's going to record him and he cannot be fully himself. And this is something I haven't even thought of, to be perfectly fair. I never thought like, oh, what if someone records me? But it seems to be like a real thing that younger generation, and it makes me sound old, but I'm 30, I swear, that younger person is really afraid of being recorded all the time whenever they go. So that was also an eye-opening experience.
Well, Lexi, you could pass for half that age. You didn't have to tell us your age at all. We would have fully believed you were in your early 20s. So it's you and your sister, Maya, is it?
Maya.
So you came home from Amsterdam and you were like, let's do this.
Well, I was actually born in Poland. I was visiting my friend in Amsterdam. I'm a pretty worldwide person. I actually live in Ireland for 3 years, my sister for 20. And she was looking for places to actually meet new people and make friends. And I said, oh, yeah, this offline club was cool, but it wasn't here. So I was like, okay, so you know what? Want to make a lot of friends? We're going to start making those things. And she was like, okay, why not?
So what was your first event?
Our first event was in February and it was a hangout. So hangouts are the events during which we bring like coloring books, things to journal, to draw. We have puzzles, board games, card games and things like this. And we're basically having a hangout with our friends. So the first half an hour or an hour is like time for yourself. So you just kind of slow down. Remember that you don't have your phone. You cannot look for it. It's scary for some people because we actually lock those phones away. And then after this hour, we have the time with the community and people start playing games together, making some friends or enemies. If you play Uno, because this is how you make enemies. We also have chess and other games as well. And we're just basically teaching people how to spend time without their phones. And some of our youngest members actually were so happy that they survived 3 hours without their phones. One of the guys wanted a high five. He was so excited. He was just jumping. And it really made me happy. And every time I'm giving people away the phones, I'm asking, so how was it without your phone for 3 hours? And usually I'm hearing things between kind of scary and oddly entertaining.
And a sense of relief. That was something I certainly read from your site. People say it's just a relief. So there's a phone hotel is what you call it. So you hand your phone in at the start and it gets locked away somewhere safe. So it's completely gone for that time. And you're encouraging people just to see what happens.
Yes, exactly. So we have this phone hotel. It's a box. We just put the phone in, give you a number so you don't lose it. So some people are really afraid. Like on the first event, someone asked, like, oh, how many people actually gave their phones away? And I just showed her the box and I said, everyone. And it was like 20 phones in there. And she just looked at me with shock and she was like, okay, I'll give it then away too. And some people were also like really scared, like their hands were shaking to give the phone away. Other person gave me two of her phones. She had the normal and the work one. And at the moment I put it in and she got the tags, she said, the freedom.
It's mad, isn't it? Yes. I mean, it's so simple and yet it's actually so powerful. Like we're really feeling it, that the smartphone has brought so much to our lives. Yes. But I don't think we realise. I know we talk about phone addiction and social media and compare and despair, but I don't know until it's taken away, do you really get to feel what it's taking or what you can gain from taking a break? It's really hard in the house. Often you'll say, I'm not going to go on social media now until right now. And you can't do it. So that enforced time. What about the deep questions then? Do you find it's easier for people to engage in that way when the phones are gone?
Actually, yes. I actually noticed that a lot of people don't really know how to have a conversation anymore. And considering what I've seen in real life, it's even if you see people on dates, they kind of don't talk to each other much. So what we came up with is on every single table, we have cards with meaningful questions. And at the beginning of the event, we say that they are there, they are green, you will see them. And if you have problems asking people questions, you can just use one of those. And with the cards, actually, people have a start. Usually they use one or two, and then they go through with other topics and other things that they are talking about. And it's really interesting to see the moment in which like brain switches from all the surface thing into the deep conversations in which people can discuss everything. It's from art to work to normal life to everything that is going around. Or in Ireland, the sun, we missed it in February a lot. So it's really interesting to see. And I think it's something that we also need to learn, that we need to have deeper conversations with others and how to actually do it.
Because there is a loneliness epidemic.
It's everywhere, yeah. A lot of people don't know how to make friends, how to talk to people. Like, to be fair, especially when you work remotely, how do you make friends if you don't have anyone in the office? You can go to the co-working spaces, but in the co-working space, there's also a lot of people that don't talk to other people. And then what do we have left? There's literally apps that allow you to make friends or find friends. And it feels like scrolling people on Amazon, and it's really dehumanizing in a way. So having a person in front of you that also wants to make a connection is a way different experience. And I think we need more of this. Like we used to say that it takes a village to raise a child. We don't have a village anymore. So our goal is to make as many villages as possible, to have the support, to have people that you can talk to have people that can give you some advice or maybe have different experiences and just be a little bit more vulnerable outside of look at my best highlights of everything on social media.
Yeah, and I think when we think about a lonely person, we think of somebody who is very isolated and on their own. And yes, that can be true. But I think there can be people who are surrounded by others who are still lonely. Yes. Because they're not getting that deep connection. And I know there can be some people who might be eye rolling thinking, oh God, you don't have to go deep and share everything. But that proper connection, yes, where you have that shared experience, where you say, I'm a struggling parent, I haven't got it all figured out, I find life stressful, I found the weather difficult. Exactly. I don't know if I like my job anymore. And somebody says, me too. And the power in that shared experience, that is what real connection is. And I think, as you say, we can be surrounded by people. We can have lots of people in our life. We can even have lots of conversations. But if we're not having a proper conversation, we will say we feel lonely, we feel alone.
Yeah. And it's also about the fact that when I ask people what exciting happens in your life right now, and they say, oh, no one ever asked me that. Why not? It would be so much nicer. Like, I know that sometimes when we meet people at the doctors or something, we're really quick to start complaining. But what about we talked about the positive things as well? Like, what is currently exciting? And so many people have so many exciting things happening in their lives, and you can ask questions, and so many people do such amazing things as well, like the hobbies, the art that they do. Amazing. And it's so nice to hear, and it always makes me so happy to hear the good things from people as well. And I think really there may be a lot of people around us, but they don't really care in a way that we would like to. Or everyone is busy with their own thing. And instead of really having those connections outside, they spend time scrolling.
So when is your next event?
Offline walks in which we take people for a hike and take away their phones away. I know it's terrifying. You cannot make pictures. But I will have a camera. And we have events on 1st of April as well as 21st, I believe, of March. I believe so. We have a full calendar on our Instagram and on our Luma calendar. So there's a lot of events showing up there all the time.
Well, I absolutely love it. What a bright spark. And you are no doubt spreading that around. I think I'm going to have to come and experience one for myself.
Please do.
You can find out more at theoffline-club.com. Lexi, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me and hope to see you a lot of people soon.
So that's it for Alive and Kicking for this week. My thanks to my producer, Marais O'Sullivan, to Hugo De Silva Scott, who was on sound. Rory Galvin was on podcasts. And thanks to you for listening. I will see you next week.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.